Hello, listeners. I'm here to give you another little content warning. We're going to be talking about murder today and the murder of women, and particularly the graphic murder of women set to song. So use discretion when listening.
Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tiny Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, murder ballads. Hello, and thanks for joining us. Hello, Ben.
Hello, hello. Welcome, one and all, to our spectacular musical episode about murder ballads.
Yay. So,
yeah. Brace yourself, because I'm probably going to be doing a little bit of singing today about murder in particular. I know, I do have to say I love the word murder.
Yes.
Obviously not the phenomenon, but murder is such a cool word. Every time I say it in class, I have to be like, murder.
Yeah. Do you remember from the Minority Report, did you remember that film? Tom Cruise.
Vaguely.
How it was pre-crime.
Yeah, the precogs could see the future, and then they would spit out these balls and he would go arrest people before they committed a crime.
But that's what they did. Mm-hmm. They went, murder.
Murder most foul.
Yes.
Yeah, so anyway, we're going to talk about murder ballads today, and I'll define what those are specifically in just a minute, but Ralph Stanley, who is my favorite kind of old-time mountain singer, sings a song called Pretty Polly, which is quite a catchy little tune, and he recorded a version of this with Patti Loveless. Listeners are probably much more familiar with who Patti Loveless is than Ralph
who
Stanley.
Knows with our listeners.
Well, that's true, but obviously, I like Ralph the best, but also he's from my home county. I might have said that on a podcast before, but anyway, Ralph Stanley lived in Coburn, Virginia, and I'm pound, same county.
Wise
County. But anyway, the duet that he did with Patti Loveless, it's kind of like a call and answer. You know, one does one stanza and the other one does the next stanza. But anyway, it starts off and it goes, you know, Polly, pretty Polly, come go along with me before we get married, some pleasure to see. And as the song goes on, he takes Pretty Polly to the mountains, and he kills her.
Uh-oh.
And he ends up in the jailhouse, killed Pretty Polly, and tried to get away. But anyway, that's an example of a murder ballad. And other classic examples include Tom Dooley, Omi Wise, Banks of the Ohio, in Knoxville Girl, which I know I've mentioned that in some part of that on the podcast before. But Johnny Cash, on another one of my faves, recorded a lot of these. I think I mentioned Long Black Veil before and Cocaine Blues, and both of those are kind of sort of murder ballads, not exactly fitting the formula we're going to talk about, but definitely both of those involve murder.
Murder.
Mm-hmm. But before we talk about the ballad of the murder variety, why don't you tell our listeners what a ballad is?
Well, sure. The word ballad comes from the French mm-hmm. language, mm-hmm. and basically means a dancing song. Yep. Originally, a ballad was a narrative story set to song, mm-hmm. but it has taken on the contemporary meaning of a slow love song, and now the sort of sentimental love songs of pop and rock music are called ballads.
Yeah, so the original ballad was kind of a song that like tells a specific story, and I remember learning about that in school and then like getting confused when those late night infomercials that would like advertise the CDs or records they put out that were like a combination of different songs, and the words would scroll up. So anyway, you know, like they had like the rock ballad infomercial or the power ballad infomercial, and I was like, that's not what Mrs. Mickey Dale told us a ballad was. So I was like really confused. But anyway, now ballads kind of refer to, we talk about ballads, like the love song. But the original meaning of a ballad was a story. And murder ballads particularly tell the story of a murder set to music. And typically the song is written or sung from the perspective of the murderer. And usually the murderer and the victim are specifically named. So I mentioned Pretty Polly. Polly is obviously the victim. And then also Willie is the murderer. And a lot of these murder songs, have, for some reason, have like the generically named murderer is Willie. Knoxville Girl is a Willie also. So
Willie.
Anyway, Willie is the one of the more common murderers in murder ballads.
Yeah. Before we go on, I just want to clarify. You don't mean murdering someone while listening to music.
No, right.
That,
no,
that joke fell too late. I should have said. I should have mentioned this joke right after you said that, because now it's fallen too late for it to be funny.
No, I found it amusing.
Thank you.
Don't sell yourself short, girl.
Too late on that one. Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead.
We talked about like satanic panic before. So yes. Like, you know, rock music. You get to say that like rock music makes you murder somebody.
Right.
Or worship the devil.
Yes.
But anyway, murder ballads. So there's kind of a general formula for these songs. And I will refer back to the lyrics of Pretty Polly to illustrate kind of how these murder ballads typically go. So first of all, a man invites a woman to usually like go on a walk or a ride and talk about getting married. So Polly, Pretty Polly, come go along with me. Let's go for a walk.
And it's like courting. Mm-hmm. Courting is what they used to call it.
Yeah. Froggy went a courting and he did ride. Uh-huh. My grandmother used to sing that song to me all the time. but anyway, yeah, they go courting on a walk and usually talking about getting married. Mm-hmm. And then they end up in kind of an isolated place that will eventually become the crime scene. Yeah,
like mistake, Polly.
Yeah, a body of water or a weeping willow. So he led her over mountains and valleys so deep. And in this song, they end up like walking to the grave that he dug for her the night before. So then he...
Never let yourself be taken to a second location, Polly.
Yeah, I know. And always let your friends know where you're going.
It's murder 101.
Right, exactly. That actually comes into play in Hearsay in a murder ballad I'm going to talk about later on. The victim did tell a friend that she was going somewhere in the... but anyway, the next one is, the man then threatens to kill the woman. He like picks up a stick or pulls out a knife. And like I said, you know, in Pretty Polly, he takes her to a grave. Polly, your guess is about right. I dug on your grave the biggest part of last night. So then, you know, he intimates murder. And then there's usually a line about the woman begging for mercy. So she knelt down before him pleading for her life. Let me be a single girl if I can't be your wife. And then obviously the pleas for mercy fall on ears that don't hear that. and then he kills her. And usually this is described pretty graphically, and I'll give more detail on that later. But Pretty Polly says, he stabbed her through the heart and the blood did overflow. And then usually the song ends with either the man getting caught or sometimes he turns himself in and nobody will go his bail and he's in jail. We talked about bail and jail rhyming before.
Bail and jail.
And sometimes he is sentenced to death. So I already said, you know, the song ends. He went, you know, killed Pretty Polly trying to get away after went to the jailhouse. So murder ballads can be traced back to the UK, to Old English and Scottish backcountry. And the cultures of those areas were very oral. They were oral cultures.
O-R-A-L.
Yeah.
Not get your oral. A-U-R-A-L, yeah, because depending on where you're from, you might say those words the
oral,
same.
Kind of like rural, oral, yeah. But oral cultures, and get your minds out of the gutter doesn't mean that.
It's oral traditions.
Yes, exactly, oral tradition. It means that stories, folk tales, songs, and tunes kind of function to transmit knowledge. Instead of writing things down, you pass them along through story and song. Yes. And a particular brand of this was the love song, particularly about murder. Which,
I love you so much, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, exactly. Involved a man killing his lover out of jealousy or a desire for social mobility. And particularly these songs are kind of situated in cultures that tended to permit men to use violence to control women.
Right.
So in the 17th century, English and Scottish settlers immigrated to the Blue Ridge Mountains and the Cumberland Gap areas of the U.S. and transported this phenomenon. And so the murder ballad became particularly popular in the Appalachian region of the U.S. and subsequently the American South in bluegrass and traditional folk songs.
And we both say Appalachian and not Appalachian.
No, we do not say that.
And so people just made up songs about killing women, eh?
Eh, yeah. Well, some of them are made up, but some of them are also based in reality. So some murder ballads are like reworkings of old songs. So Knoxville Girl can be traced all the way back to Ireland and England, going all the way back to 1683. So obviously the song's about Knoxville, Tennessee, but it's kind of like reworking and adding, changing the name of the place. But also some murder ballads are based on historical murders, actually. For example, Tom Dooley and Omi Wise are both famous murder ballads about real murders in North Carolina. So Tom Dooley was recorded and made popular by the Kingston Trio in the 1950s, and it's sung about a man named Tom Dooley, the night before he was hanged. So he's in the jailhouse, and he's going to be hanged the next day. Hang down your head, Tom Dooley, hang down your head and cry. Hang down your head, Tom Dooley, poor boy, you're bound to die. And this song's based on a real murder. So
yeah, I did not know that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Tom Dula, he was a North Carolina man who was a Confederate veteran and apparently was quite the womanizer and supposedly had syphilis.
Yes, okay.
And he was overheard saying he was going to murder whoever gave it to him. And Laura Foster, I mentioned this earlier, the woman that you know, he had been seeing, told someone he was that she was going to meet with him later that night, and then obviously she was found dead, and he was the suspect.
Yeah.
And he was eventually executed in 1868. Mm. But an interesting fact about this case is that it involved that hearsay evidence that she told friend she was going to meet him, and the friend was, you know, saying in court, she told me this.
Right.
And this case isn't really well known, but the facts of it are very similar to another Supreme Court case that's kind of controversial and taught in law schools about hearsay evidence.
Nice. Nice connection there.
Yeah. Omi Wise, and Omi is kind of like a nickname for Naomi.
Yes.
So Omi Wise, and I wasn't familiar with this song at all.
I've never heard of it either.
All of the others I've heard of and like know very well.
Yes.
But this song was in like every article that I read about
murder ballads.
Murder ballads, yeah. So obviously I went back to YouTube and I listened to the whole thing, and I think the reason that it's kind of the one that's mentioned all the time is that it's like the most particular in terms of like details and really like tells the real story and uses like first and last names of everybody involved. It's like a really descriptive song about this particular murder. But this was about a real case that happened in 1807, and Jonathan Lewis was the murderer, and he murdered his pregnant girlfriend, Naomi Wise, and essentially he wanted to marry up. So, he fooling around with this girl, got her pregnant, but he had aspirations to, like, marry the merchant's daughter, so she was inconvenient and in the way.
So, Omi had to go.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, too bad.
Drowned her.
So why did people write songs about murder and the murder of women in particular? Yeah. And what functions did or do murder ballads serve?
Well, I mean, of course, there's this element of like passing on the news about a murderer and telling and singing the story so it's not forgotten. And some scholars have posited that murder ballads kind of serve the function to like identify and socially isolate the murderer. So murder ballads make be intended to kind of serve as like this soft form of deterrence. Like, you don't want to end up being named as the murderer in a murder ballad, so don't
murder.
You
don't want to be Jonathan Lewis.
Yeah, no, or Tom Dooley.
But why are they
or
always
Willie
about men killing women?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's a good point. Because generally these murder ballads are just about like the man killing the woman. But more recently, we've kind of seen the script flipped in some ways, and I'll talk more about that later. But the classic murder ballads largely about the phenomenon of patriarchal violence.
Right.
And of course, Appalachia has been and still is in a lot of ways a very patriarchal culture.
Right.
With like strong rules and expectations for men and women, and especially for women. And women who were murdered in these ballads were often, quote unquote, unvirtuous women. So
not virgins.
Well, right, they were not virgins at all. And in fact, a common theme in like the real crimes is that the man got the woman pregnant, and you know, before they get married, and instead of marrying her, decides to kill her.
Yes.
So this kind of serves as like a warning to young women to lead, you know, quote unquote, respectable lives.
Right, because it's never the fault of the man. It's always the fault of the woman who has sex with him.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, you know, I'm going to talk about this later. Usually the songs are kind of positioned like to make you feel sorry or sympathy for the man. Yeah. Like Tom Dooley, right. Like this poor man is in prison and he's going to be hanged tomorrow. And interestingly, a lot of these murder ballads don't provide any motive for the crime or don't provide the detail.
Oh.
But that was the exception with Omi Wa. So I listened to that and it does like specifically say she was pregnant. But a lot of them just kind of like leave out this detail about the pregnancy.
Yes.
And I can remember like hearing these songs and being really confused by it because it's be like, okay, let's go and walk, sweet woman, and talk about getting married. And the next thing you know, he's like stabbing her or beating her to death. Right. Like, what is going on here?
What happened from A to B?
Yeah. But it's like this intentionally leaving out the pregnancy, being conspicuously absent from the songs. And in light of that kind of like very puritanical Appalachian culture and its rules about sex, especially for women, it's like too scandalous to sing about a woman having sex and getting pregnant before wedlock. But not singing about brutally and graphically murdering her.
That's perfectly okay.
Yeah, exactly. And I mentioned this before, but a lot of times, and this is kind of more implied in like the tone and tune of the songs, that, it's kind of this mournful lament about the impending execution and kind of invites the listener to have a bit of sympathy for the murderer. And there's this undertone, you know, of like this man being driven to murder and committing these crimes of passion because of his unfaithful or his inconvenient lover. But then on the other hand, murder ballads often try to kind of reinforce women's place in society and restore them to their place, kind of at the same time. So even though the songs cover up like the unvirtuous activities of women, they also kind of emphasize that, you know, when women are killed, they kind of like reclaim their feminine innocence.
Yeah.
So one scholar in her dissertation called that maidenization, like trying to maidenize these women. So you've got like these unvirtuous women who become, you know, who are pregnant, but they become innocent and respectable again by being killed by like the terrible man.
Yeah, that's freaking awful.
Yeah, she's like led away from society, killed, and then like baptized and thrown in a river or lake and ultimately transformed into the good woman once again.
Yeah, so you mentioned flipping the script about gender roles in murder ballads. Tell me more.
Yeah, so certainly there were, you know, probably some examples before this, but particularly starting in the 90s, there were some pretty famous country songs about women killing men and especially their abusers. So I'm thinking particularly of my favorite song by The Chicks, Sans Dixie.
Exactly.
Yeah, The Chicks Sans Dixie had a song called Goodbye Earl, which is like one of it's so good.
Hilarious.
The music video is so good.
Yeah.
Like it has him like at like a zombie like dancing around with all of them in the front of the produce stand at the end. It has some like really good rhymes in it.
It's
too.
A good 90s video.
Yeah. Turns out Earl was a missing person who nobody missed at all because Earl had to die. It's like, ain't it dark wrapped up in that tarp? Let's pack lunch and we'll stuff you in the trunk, Earl. Earl was abusive husband and wife and the friend murdered him and stuffed him in a trunk. But there's also like Martina McBride's song Independence Day kind of implies there might be some like light murder on the part of the abused woman. Miranda Lambert also has a song called Gunpowder and Lead. And I mean, this is a little bit more like in your face.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, like the abuser's getting out of jail and she's sitting by the door with her shotgun and I'm going to show you what a little girl's made of. Gunpowder and lead when you get home, buddy.
All right, don't mess with her.
Yeah, and apparently Taylor Swift has written a murder ballad.
The Swifties are going to be so mad at us for not knowing this.
Yeah, I had no idea about this, but she wrote a song called No Body, No Crime. And I hadn't heard about this before I did
me
this.
Me either.
But it's like a double murder ballad.
Oh, okay.
So the Taylor Swift, the singer or the author point of view of the song, her friend gets killed by her abusive husband because he was unfaithful to her.
Okay.
And then Taylor Swift, the singer of the song, goes and kills the husband for killing his wife.
Yeah. A little revenge on the side.
And then pins it on the mistress.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's called, you know, Nobody, No Crime. And kind of the refrain is like, I think he did it, but I just can't prove it.
So, yeah. Well, okay. Earl, he did have to die, didn't he? He deserved it.
He gotta go.
Goodbye, Earl.
He gotta go.
You got anything else?
Yeah, I guess the last thing that I would say, and I mentioned this earlier, is that a lot of these murder ballads are actually pretty gruesome and graphic in terms of their depiction of violence and violence against women. In you know, like I remember, you know, back in the day, there was a concern about like rap music and the violence in rap music.
I know,
but these murder ballads put those rap lyrics to shame.
Sure did.
And the violence in these murder ballads is kind of sensationalized in some of the ways that, like, the worst sorts of true crime currently does. We talked about that, ethics of true crime. You know, one scholar I read compared murder ballads to kind of like the lurid and voyeuristic violence of horror movies. So it's kind of like this, you know, common theme, like true crime, horror movies, going all the way back to murder ballads. Like, we're entertained by violence and especially by graphic violence done to women.
Right.
See also our gender in superhero episode.
Yes, do.
As well. But women in these songs are often killed in pretty graphic ways. And, you know, it's kind of like something that's come up a couple of times in our podcast. Like, we tend to laugh at dark things because they're like dark and outrageous. And it's not that like graphically murdering women is funny, but like singing about it in graphic detail is sort of funny.
It is.
You know?
Yeah.
One common form of killing your lover in Appalachian murder ballads is drowning. So a lot of them involve either, you know, drowning the woman or throwing her in the river. Banks of the Ohio and Knoxville Girl, both of them, the woman gets thrown in the river.
Yeah.
And one article that I read, like it was the Law Review article, and these guys had like several really funny lines. But basically a quote from that article said, like, if only Appalachian women knew how to swim, then we would only have about half of the murder ballads that we currently have, because so many of them end up getting drowned or thrown in the river.
Well, maybe, you know, that is kind of less gruesome than being stabbed to death or talking about slashing throats.
Mm-hmm. But then that also happens too.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, there are other kind of pretty gruesome depictions of murder. And Pretty Polly, it says like, he opened up her bosom as white as any snow. He stabbed her through the heart and the blood did overflow. So that's pretty graphic.
Yeah.
But the most graphic of all is Knoxville Girl. And I mentioned this before, but I'll like do the full murder in detail. So this is pretty graphic. I picked a stick up off the ground and I knocked that fair girl down. She fell down on her bended knees, for mercy she did cry, saying, Willie dear, don't kill me here, I'm not prepared to die. She never spoke another word, I only beat her more. Until the ground around her within her blood did pour. And it's not done yet, not done yet. I grabbed her by her golden curls and dragged her round and round, throwing her into the river that flows through Knoxville town. Go down, you Knoxville girl, you can never be my bride.
Well, yeah, because he killed her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that was pretty graphic.
Pretty graphic, yeah. So that's probably a good place to end, unless you have anything else.
I do not.
All right, so let's do our minute to spin it then, where we give our takeaway from the show. So, Tommy, what's your spin in just a minute?
Okay, I'm not going to sing this.
Okay.
Judge, you want to hear my plea before you open up your court, but I don't want no sympathy, because I done cut my good man's throat. I caught him with a trifling Jane. Ooh. I warned him about before. I had my knife and went insane, and the rest you ought to know. So that is a song by the Empress of the Blues, Tennessee mm-hmm. legend Bessie Smith, called Send Me to the Electric Chair.
Oh.
And she was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1989.
Nice.
So, you know, a lot of these songs are country songs, and it makes sense given the roots in like Appalachian folk music and stuff. But I wanted to feed, like, there are several, you know, black women who sang blues, and they have these murder ballads that are sort of flipping the script. And also, I just wanted to point out what you already said, that the murder ballad, they tend to focus on dead women and girls. It's very much the same as what we see today with the focus of most true crime.
Yeah, kind of missing white woman syndrome.
Yes.
And also what you said before, so I cut this out but for like time's sake, but I was going to talk about kind of like the difference between like bluegrass and mountain music.
Right.
And you know, like bluegrass is, you know, we think of it as like, oh, but it was really only like invented in the 40s. And
yes.
Like, well, it was based on like the kind of old traditional mountain music with like fiddles and banjos that obviously had Appalachian roots, but like the banjo was heavily influenced from the continent of Africa. So even like hillbilly mountain music is.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of, what's the word? Stealing without giving credit.
Co-opting.
Yeah, co-opting, but there are those influences.
Definitely. Okay, so Ben, what's your spin?
Yeah, so I've done a lot of singing today, and maybe I'll do just a little bit more, but we don't need no more murder ballads. We need more ballads like the Ballad of Jed Clampett, but like hillbillies striking it rich, you know, come and listen to my story about a man named Jed.
Poor mountaineer barely kept his family fed.
Then one day he was shooting at some food,
when
and
up from
the
ground
came
a bubbling crude.
Yeah, so I will say that, you know, murder ballads are like neat pieces of history and culture, and we should recognize the problem for them. But I'm not like advocating like canceling them or getting rid of them, because like these are, you know, still entertaining songs, parts of culture, singing at festivals and those types of things. But we definitely need more songs about hillbillies striking it rich.
Please. For sure.
let's put that out into the universe and try to manifest something.
Yeah, for sure. We are a community-driven podcast sponsored by the Gandhi Center and produced by JMU Libraries. Check out our website, linked in show notes, to see how you can support our educational programming.